On this Saturday night, deadly weather, horrific scenes across the country, hundreds of accidents as motorists caught in a dangerous grip of ice and snow. And there is more severe weather on the way. Desperate days in the ruins of Aleppo after the Syrian government crushes the rebels. Tens of thousands, many of them children, still waiting to be evacuated. New twist in the sensational murder case involving real estate heir Robert Durst. The new revelation about his apparent confession and love story. As the country says farewell to an American hero, the story of John and Annie Glenn and what bonded them for a lifetime. Nightly News begins now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Jose Diaz-Balart.
Good evening. 56 million Americans are under winter weather advisories tonight and a promise of some of the coldest weather the country has seen this year. Still days before winter officially begins. Today, snow and ice making for deadly driving. At least 10 people have been killed on the roads in five states, stretching from California to the Carolinas. Hundreds of accidents have been reported. And that is where we begin tonight with our Morgan Radford. Morgan.
Jose, temperatures dipping below zero out west and now more snow expected here in the east, creating a deadly combination tonight for drivers on the road. A chilling moment caught on cell phone video. A tractor trailer bursts into flames just moments after slipping off an icy highway bridge, jumping the barrier, and then plummeting to the ground below. That crash set off a chain reaction. It's debris causing a 55-car pileup, killing two and injuring several others. Mirror images seen throughout the country. Icy conditions causing accidents.
It's put the fear of God in me. I'm going to go home. I'm going to stay in today.
And even more pileups like this one in New Mexico involving 40 cars. In Indianapolis, people spent the night stranded inside their vehicles on an interstate gridlocked for more than 9 hours because of ice.
Turned the car off most of the time to conserve fuel.
Others took matters into their own hands, driving the wrong way to an exit ramp, desperate for an escape despite the danger. Freezing temperatures making it even more difficult for rescue crews.
Here in the Northeast, it's all about cleanup and prevention. This is 350 tons of salt designed to melt that ice on the roads.
It's slippery spots, it's hard to see the ice, that's the problem. All of a sudden you hit something, you're sliding.
Drivers across the country tonight on high alert.
This is the North. I mean, this isn't Florida, so you have to be ready for pretty much anything.
Hundreds of accidents reported in just the past 24 hours on highways just like this. This as 56 million Americans remain under a winter weather advisory with up to 6 inches of snow expected to slam the Northeast. Jose?
Morgan Radford, thank you. With the snow moving out, the cold is moving in, and that's going to be the big problem for millions this coming week. Meteorologist Rafael Miranda joins us with more. Rafael.
That's right, Jose. Another wave of the polar vortex moving into the country over the next couple of days, and our travel nightmare continues. Snow now moving back into Chicago, but the big story over the next few days will be the extreme dangerous cold. It is returning. Even right now, that Arctic blast moving to the Dakotas. Take a look at these current wind chills. Anywhere from 21 below in Minneapolis to 40 below in Minot. North Dakota feeling the worst of us. Now, all of this cold advances east over the next couple of days. Tomorrow morning, waking up to wind chills near 40 below in Minneapolis. Not much better. 45 below in Bismarck. And these, believe it or not, are your high temperatures on Sunday. Could be the coldest game ever played at Soldier Field. A high temperature of 7 in Chicago. 8 below zero is your high temperature in Cedar Rapids. And Monday morning, heading back to work and school. How about a wind chill of 27 below in the Windy City?
Jose? Rafael Miranda, thank you very much. Another story unfolding tonight. A big problem with a water system in Corpus Christi, Texas. This involves a chemical leak that got into the water system, serving hundreds of thousands of residents. 4 unconfirmed reports that people got sick after drinking the water, and tens of thousands have been told not to use it. Tommy Leitner has details tonight.
Texas environmental agents say a suspected chemical leak at an industrial plant forced all 320,000 residents in the Gulf Coast city to stop using the water. No drinking, no bathing.
Right now, it looks like we've got about 15% of the city has water that's flowing. We still got a big issue out there.
But today the public learned the plant and concerns over the water supply started more than 2 weeks ago. City officials getting reports as early as December 1st before notifying residents on the 14th.
If you're going to ask me, were we breached or were we not breached, I don't know.
The ban causing a run on water in local stores, 27,000 cases of water already donated and being handed out at public water stations. 30 water samples are being tested by the EPA in Houston to determine if there is contamination in the water lines. Results are expected as soon as tomorrow. An attorney for the chemical company says they are cooperating completely with the investigation. Tammy Leitner, NBC News.
Thousands of people tonight remain trapped in the Syrian city of Aleppo, hoping they are finally evacuated to safety after the Assad regime regained control. We get the latest from Bill Neely, who remains in Aleppo tonight.
4 years of war have turned Aleppo to a wasteland where people salvage what they can from the ruins of their homes. This was the rebel-held east. President Assad's forces rule this rubble now. I want to tell America, he says, that we're victorious and we'll rebuild this with our bare hands. Thousands are now waiting to escape the last rebel area here. A new deal may allow them out. But the last deal ended in gunfire. People scattering in terror as militiamen drove civilians back and then arrested and handcuffed them, their fate unknown. The death throes of a divided Aleppo are chaotic. The fighting in Aleppo is all but over. The level of destruction in this city really quite extraordinary. But there are warplanes overhead. There was shelling overnight. There is no ceasefire. There's no trust. And for the civilians still trapped, all of that's bad news. Among them, thousands of children, like these orphans, forced to retreat from the gunfire. Regime loyalists and rebels blame each other for the collapse of the evacuation deal.
They broke it. They did not fulfill it. That's why, you know, the process have been delayed or stopped.
Will the evacuation be back on?
Yes, I don't know.
No one knows. But people are dying of war wounds in the district that's still under siege. Doctors desperate to get them out. It is a city of misery and of death. The UN this week called it hell. And the smoke is still rising from its depths tonight. Bill Neely, NBC News, Aleppo.
The Pentagon said today that China will return an underwater U.S. drone seized by one of its naval vessels this week in the South China Sea. In a statement, the Pentagon said it had secured an understanding to return the scientific drone through what it called direct engagement with Chinese authorities. President-elect Donald Trump criticized the seizure as unprecedented. China accused the U.S. of hyping up the incident. And there is new desperation in Venezuela tonight because of a cash crisis in that country, which is in the middle of a brutal economic downturn. Protests and looting broke out due to a shortage of cash after the socialist government announced it would withdraw the largest banknote. Because of rampant inflation, the currency was almost worthless, but there were delays in circulating a new, higher banknote, leaving many people without any money. The University of Minnesota football team said today it will play in the Holiday Bowl later this month, reversing a threat to boycott the game. That threat came after the suspension of 10 players following allegations by a woman who said she was sexually assaulted by some of them. We get more tonight from Kevin Tibbles.
After boycotting practice and threatening to skip the upcoming Holiday Bowl game, the University of Minnesota football team is returning to the field.
We are ending our boycott.
The Golden Gophers stood shoulder to shoulder 2 days ago, angered over suspensions handed down to 10 players.
We are concerned that our brothers have been named publicly with reckless disregard in violation of their constitutional rights.
The football suspensions came following a police investigation into allegations by a young woman who said she had been drinking and was sexually assaulted after the season opener in September. The Hennepin County attorney declined to file criminal charges, saying there was insufficient admissible evidence. But following its own investigation, the school acted. Today, University President Eric Kaler says the suspensions won't be overturned.
You know, we made a values-based decision.
Other schools have also taken disciplinary action for athletes' behavior. Just this week, Princeton suspended its men's swim team over sexist and racist emails. This past fall, both Columbia and Harvard also suspended sports team seasons over inappropriate emails.
She is not alone!
In Minneapolis today, a rally in support of the woman in this case.
We believe her and support her and stand with her.
Members of the football team also took a stand.
Sexual harassment and violence against women, they have no place on this campus.
The university promises the suspended players will have a fair hearing, with the possibility for an appeal.
As a team, we understand that what has occurred these past few days in playing football for the University of Minnesota is much larger than us.
With the boycott over, the team is now back to focusing on the big game. Kevin Tibbles, NBC News, Chicago.
A survey out this fall showed a growing shortage of teachers in this country, with parts of almost every state dealing with the issue. In Los Angeles, they were able to fill every vacancy this year, but the city is looking for ways to attract non-traditional teachers, among them veterans. Here's Joe Fryer.
This California high school is the scene of a whole new mission.
Good morning.
For military veteran Jose Puentes.
When is it okay for a government to lie to its own people?
He's a first-year teacher guiding students through world history.
Are you guys ready?
Using the skills he learned in the Navy, like discipline and adapting quickly to change.
So that pressure, the stress that comes with becoming a teacher, it was sort of just a flip of the page of what I was doing in the military.
It's the kind of match that makes sense as California deals with a dwindling supply of teachers. In a recent survey of more than 200 school districts across the state, 75% reported a shortage of qualified teachers, especially in the areas of math, science, and special education.
Do you have to find some creative solutions?
We do.
Michelle King is superintendent of the Los Angeles Unified School District. She says more must be done to get young students interested in teaching.
Because in elementary school, you know, you say, well, what do you want to be? And all of the kids, you know, raise their hand, doctor, nurse, lawyer. They have, we want them to say teacher.
All right, finish up your sentences.
Certainly, Mr. Puentes never imagined he would become a teacher. He graduated high school with a 1.75 GPA, but in the military met role models who changed his life. Today, he's the role model.
After he came in, he motivated me to keep moving forward, not look at the past.
Now the L.A. School District is recruiting veterans through a program called Troops to Education. Well, that's not how Puentes got his job. He thinks teaching is the perfect career for vets, searching for a sense of purpose and a public mission after their time in uniform is done.
Now that I'm back in the classroom, it's like I'm serving my country again.
And it's how he plans to serve until the day he retires. Joe Fryer, NBC News, Los Angeles.
Still ahead tonight, the bombshell involving real estate heir Robert Durst. Could it affect the murder case against him? Also, remembering their life together, the enduring love affair between John and Annie Blaine. We are back with an explosive new development in the murder case of real estate heir Robert Durst. It's a new revelation about what he told prosecutors after his arrest following the popular HBO documentary series, The Jinx. We get the latest tonight from Gotti Schwartz.
It was the spellbinding moment in the HBO documentary series, The Jinx.
So you wrote one of these, but you didn't write the other one.
I wrote this one, but I did not write the Godavra one.
New York real estate heir Robert Durst confronted about two women in his life, his wife Kathleen, who disappeared in 1982 and is presumed dead, and close friend Susan Berman, killed in 2000. In The Jinx, Durst caught on a hot mic talking to himself in the bathroom after producers pressed him about handwriting similarities between a letter he wrote to Berman and one written by the killer.
Kill them all. Of course.
But was it a confession or the mumblings of an eccentric millionaire high on drugs? In court documents filed by prosecutors on Friday, Durst told investigators, quote, "I was on meth the whole time I was high on meth. In transcripts from a nearly three-hour interview the day after he was arrested, a prosecutor asks Durst, "If you had killed Susan, would you tell me?" Durst responds, "No." In the interrogation, there is no confession to the murder of Berman, but Durst did tell the prosecutor, quote, "Maybe there were two people who killed Susan." Durst saying in the days following the Jinx's final episode, quote, "I just didn't really think that I was gonna end up arrested." After his arrest, investigators found a gun in his hotel with a fake ID, a latex mask, cash, and a map of Cuba. Durst, now in jail awaiting trial, his attorney, Dick DeGuerin, has long maintained his innocence.
Bob is not guilty. He did not kill Susan Berman.
Today, we called his lawyer for comment, who told us we could only quote him as saying, "I think we just got f***ed," telling us he planned to elaborate more at a hearing in Los Angeles on Wednesday. Gotti Schwartz, NBC News, Los Angeles.
And coming up, a new theory on what led to the arrest of Anne Frank. Pope Francis turned 80 years old today. He celebrated the milestone by having breakfast with eight homeless people at the Vatican before Saturday Mass. Speaking to cardinals, he described old age as a frightening thought, but then recalled words from his first papal greeting when he said old age is the thirst for knowledge. The pontiff also asked the faithful for prayers for his health. Later on, he enjoyed a group birthday serenade. It's an unsolved mystery that's been around for more than 70 years. Who betrayed Anne Frank? A new study from the Anne Frank Museum finds the famous diarist who hid with her family in an attic may not have been betrayed to the Nazis after all. Researchers now say the fateful raid on the building in Amsterdam where Frank was hidden may have been connected to the illegal trading of food rations and that authorities stumbled upon Frank's hiding place. And Dr. Henry Heimlich has died. He was the inventor of the life-saving maneuver that has saved countless choking victims over the years. This past May, he used a technique for the first time himself, saving a woman choking at their retirement home. Heimlich died this week in Cincinnati after suffering complications from a heart attack. He was 96 years old. When we come back, the loves of their lives, celebrating John and Annie Glenn. It is a solemn ritual at this time of year, volunteers placing hundreds of thousands of donated wreaths on headstones at Arlington National Cemetery. They brave the cold and freezing rain, 44,000 people showing up to help with the effort. The Wreaths Across America project started at Arlington in 1992. The organization says 245,000 wreaths were placed at Arlington today. Finally tonight, the country said goodbye today to an American hero. The hearse carrying the body of John Glenn was escorted from the Ohio State House in Columbus to Ohio State University, where a memorial service was held to honor the astronaut and former senator. His widow, Annie, was among the many who came to honor Glenn, who died last week at 95. Yesterday, Annie Glenn placed her hand on her husband's casket, a symbol of their unbreakable bond. And Thompson, tonight, on a love affair that lasted a lifetime.
John and Annie Glenn. Lives so intertwined, Annie never knew life without John.
I have known my husband since I was two. And he and I were in love when we were in the eighth grade. And he promised me that life would never be dull.
And it wasn't.
Roger, they're okay and I feel fine.
But for all his accomplishments, astronaut, senator, presidential candidate, it was her triumph that he celebrated.
First time she was able to speak normally compared to with other people was in her late 50s.
I stuttered ever since I was, that I can remember.
Something Annie coped with in their hometown of New Concord, Ohio. But the white-hot spotlight on the Mercury 7 astronauts made it much more difficult.
Are you all right? Tell me what's wrong.
Johnson!
As dramatized in the movie The Right Stuff.
If you don't want the vice president or the TV networks or anybody else to come into the house, then that's it, as far as I'm concerned. They are not coming in.
A decade later, together, they found a program for stutterers that Annie says set her free.
I couldn't exchange ideas. I couldn't talk over the telephone.
When she finally could and rang her husband.
When I called John, he cried.
That was very emotional for me because I know what it was like for her before.
NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden had his own phone conversation with Annie this April.
She said, Charlie, how you doing? I said, well, I just called to wish you a very happy 73rd wedding anniversary. She said, Charlie, you know, I think it's going to last.
Humor would get them through. Before each dangerous mission as pilot and astronaut, Glenn would tell Annie and their two children he was just going to the corner store for a pack of gum, including when he returned to space at age 77.
The last thing he handed me was this.
A souvenir from America's hero to the woman he adored. Ann Thompson, NBC News, New York.
Life was never dull. That's NBC Nightly News for this Saturday. A reminder, tomorrow morning on Meet the Press, Chuck Todd will be joined by former Defense Secretary Robert Gates and John Podesta, who was chairman of Hillary Clinton's campaign. I'm Jose Diaz-Balart reporting from New York. Thank you for the privilege of your time. Good night.